It's 6 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Steve Norman reporting. Both sides in the international negotiations over Iran's nuclear program expect the process to extend past their longstanding self-imposed Tuesday deadline for reaching a comprehensive agreement. Federica Mogherini is the EU foreign policy chief.
Postponement is not an option. It could be, again, flexibility on one day more, one day less. I'm very optimistic. No, one day more, a couple of days more, but it's going to be within some days.
In a final agreement, if it's signed, Iran will get sanctions relief while Tehran's ability to make nuclear weapons will be restricted. Greece's cabinet has decided banks there will remain closed for 6 business days. For the past couple of days, Greeks have been rushing to withdraw money following Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras's weekend decision to call a referendum on creditor proposals for Greek reforms in return for bailout funds. Mr. Tsipras blamed the Eurozone's finance ministers for their decision to reject a request for the bailout program to be extended beyond June 30th. A $1.8 billion payment is due to the International Monetary Fund tomorrow, but that might be missed. Also in the news, Burundi is going ahead with parliamentary elections today despite an opposition boycott and criticism from the United Nations and the African Union questioning the free and fair nature of the vote. President Pierre Nkurunziza's decision to run for a third term triggered a failed coup last month and continued criticism from those who say he is violating the two-term limit to the Constitution. Burundi's Constitutional Court has ruled he is eligible to run. This is VOA News. Tunisian authorities are searching for potential accomplices in connection with Friday's mass shooting at a beach resort that left 38 people dead. The Islamic State reclaimed responsibility. Thousands of tourists have left the country, but others are afraid to leave their hotels, including British tourist Gemma Harris.
We've come down to get home, 3 days on the run. They won't get us home. There's no extra flights. It's only extra seats on already scheduled flights. We don't feel safe here at all. We don't feel safe here at all. I've took 2 weeks off work to come here to relax, to have a holiday, and I'm absolutely petrified. What is going to happen next? Are my kids' lives at risk being here in this country? We don't want to be here, and we're not the only family that don't want to be here either.
Many of those killed Friday were British nationals, while others were citizens of Germany, Ireland, Belgium, and Portugal. British Prime Minister David Cameron wrote Sunday in the Daily Telegraph newspaper that the attack, along with a mosque bombing in Kuwait that killed 27 people and a deadly assault on a chemical plant in France, are part of an evil, he said, seen in other militant attacks. More than 500 people were injured in a fire at a water park over the weekend outside Taiwan's capital, Taipei. The fire accidentally erupted when colored theatrical powder ignited as it was thrown from a stage onto a crowd of 1,000 young people dancing and enjoying the music. According to Taiwan Central News Agency, the blaze was quickly brought under control, the cause under investigation. More than 1,000 people have died so far. It's from extreme heat in southern Pakistan, and the death toll is growing. Slotted Sahok reports people are upset about the situation.
Many people blame the government for an inadequate response.
More than 1,000 people have died in this city due to heat, scarcity of water, power outages. It is astonishing. Everyone from the federal government to Karachi Electric, they all are shameless.
City hospitals are overflowing with patients suffering from heat stroke, and the army has set up makeshift camps.
In the past 3 days, the hospital has admitted 5,000 heat stroke patients. We treated 250 to 300 people.
The government also has set up heat stroke prevention centers in Karachi and other regions of Sindh province. Zlatica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
A solar-powered Swiss airplane is back in the air as it attempts a 35,000-kilometer trip around the world without using any fuel. The Solar Impulse 2 flew out of central Japan early today after an unscheduled month-long stop because of bad weather.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Monday, June 29th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Burundi holds parliamentary election today despite international condemnation and more defections.
Burundi is going ahead with the parliamentary election because Burundians need to replace elected institutions by other ones elected democratically. So elections must be held.
Willy Nyamitwe is the senior advisor on media affairs to Burundian President Pierre Nkurunziza. The African Union says it will not observe today's Burundi election. There was more gunfire Sunday night in the Burundian capital, and a local district in Sierra Leone says it will for now jail violators of Ebola laws.
Yes, chronic violators are the ones that do these secret burials. These are the ones that continue to wash dead bodies. And these are the ones that continue to harbor, people in their homes without notifying the authorities.
Raymond Kabia is the district Ebola Response Center coordinator for Sierra Leone's Port Local District. A new study says getting a 10th grade education reduces the risk of HIV infection. And Kenyan researchers report a major success in a trial of a new pneumonia vaccine. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Burundians are voting today in parliamentary election despite international condemnation, opposition boycott, and defections of the country's parliament speaker and second vice president. Critics say President Pierre Nkurunziza's decision to seek a third term violates the country's constitution. Willy Nyamitwe, senior advisor on media and communication to President Pierre Nkurunziza, says no one can interpret Burundi's laws except Burundians themselves. He says Monday's parliamentary elections are being held because Burundians need to replace their current elected institutions with new and democratically elected ones.
Yes, Burundi is going ahead with the parliamentary election because Burundians need to replace elected institutions by other ones elected democratically. So elections must be held.
What do you make of the African Union chairperson, Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma, who are saying that the decision violates the Burundi constitution and the 2005 Arusha agreement?
You know, Burundi has its own constitution and its own laws. So as long as we are convinced that no law is violated, no one else can come and convince us that laws are violated. We have a constitution. We have a democratic debate in Burundi. Some politicians say the candidacy of the incumbent president is according to the constitution. Others say it's not. But the Constitutional Court came out with a decision saying that this candidacy doesn't violate any law of the country. So no one else in the country or outside the country can say this is a violation of our constitution.
So are you not concerned the fact that the African Union says it would not send observers there?
Yes, it's a matter of concern. But elections belong to Burundians and we are running out of time. We cannot allow going beyond the constitutional period. So we have to go to elections. But by chance, we have the UN, United Nations observers who are here that are going to observe these elections. And we also have local observers from civil society organizations.
We hear that the speaker of your parliament has run away. He quits his position and has run away. So, I mean, are you becoming isolated? Don't you feel that?
As a member of parliament, as a speaker, he has the right to come out with his own opinion, as everywhere else in the world. But, you know, we are going to elect new members of parliament. So when he comes at the end of his mandate, he cannot say he's running away. And you have to notice that he has a dual citizenship. He's Burundian as well as Belgian. So when he goes back home in Belgium, you cannot say he's running away. So he came in Burundi coming from Belgium, and now, at the end of his mandate, he's going back home.
The opposition, civil society groups have said these elections are not going to be free and fair. They're not transparent because no independent media is allowed to operate in the country. That so many journalists have been forced out of the country.
You have to remember that in Burundi, we don't have only three or four independent medias. We have some of them that have been destroyed during the attempts of coup, but we have others. And even during these elections, some other independent medias with the national radio and television are covering the election.
Willie Nyamitwe is the senior advisor of media and communication to Burundian President Pierre Nkurunziza. You are speaking with me from the capital, Bujumbura. The African Union says it will not observe today's Burundian legislative election because there's a lack of dialogue and consensus to bring about a lasting solution to the crisis in the country. Jacob Ina Iben is spokesman for African Union Commission Chairperson Nkurunziza na Dlamini Zuma. He says the AU believes current conditions in Burundi are not conducive to hold free, fair, and transparent elections.
The African Union Commission is not going to be fielding observers to the Burundi elections that will be taking place today, 29th of June. And the reasons have been very clear that the conditions under which the elections are being organized are not conducive for the African Union to field observers.
When you talk about conditions not conducive, why?
You definitely must have been following the situation in Burundi the last couple of weeks, particularly following the announcement of the president, Nkurunziza, to seek a third-term mandate. And so there has been an escalation of violence and demonstrations and protests, and, you know, that has resulted to a number of killings, a number of arrests, and hundreds of thousands of people have fled the country into neighboring countries. And so the humanitarian situation is quite daring. And to the African Union, these are not conditions that are really conducive for, you know, elections that the African Union would sanction as free, fair, transparent for a political situation. So the Union will not be fielding observers.
President Nkurunziza, if the election goes ahead, it's in defiance of the African Union. What can the AU do besides saying that you're not going to observe the election?
Well, there are quite a number of things that would definitely happen if elections are not legitimized by, of course, Burundi is a signatory to the African Union Charter on elections, democracy and good governance, and a number of other instruments. And so if, as a member state, they do not comply with what they themselves have ratified, then it calls for a number of other things to be implemented. And so the heads of states or the Peace and Security Council would definitely have to make decisions once the time comes. But we should say, or as a chairperson of the African Union Commission had stated some time ago, a third term would be in violation of the Arusha 2000 Peace and Reconciliation Agreement that put into the war that we all know Burundi had.
The people in Burundi, the government says the outside world has no right to say what should be the interpretation of the Burundian constitution. The Burundi people themselves should be the people who should interpret the constitution.
I'm sure you must have been following a series of interventions that have been made by various actors, national actors in Burundi. And so if these interventions or reactions or remarks or observations are being made and are not taken into consideration by the Burundian authorities, then the African Union will definitely not be blamed.
Jacob Ino Eben is a spokesman for African Union Commission Chairperson Nkurunziza na Dlamini Zuma. He was speaking with me from Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. Today is Monday, June 29th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time, 14 and a half minutes past the hour. There was intense gunfire Sunday night in Burundi's capital, Bujumbura. Witnesses say at least two people were killed overnight in the capital. Innocent Muhozi, general manager of the banned independent Renaissance Radio and Television Network in Burundi, he says gunfire has been a nightly occurrence since protesters took to the streets a month ago against President Pierre Nkurunziza's decision to seek a third term, adding to the insecurity that Burundians are experiencing ahead of today's elections.
You know, it becomes almost an every night situation where we hear gunshots during the night, whether it's in Musaga, Nyakabiga, Zabe, Chibitoke, Mutakura, Buterere. It's almost an every night situation. Most of the time, there is not so many people dying after that, but this last day, there have been reported at least 3 people died during those shootings. It's an insecurity situation that is really making a lot of trouble and worries in people here in Bujumbura and in some other places in the country.
As you mentioned, it's a daily thing. Who is responsible for this gunfire?
I cannot tell exactly who is responsible for that, but most of the time when there are those shootings, it's clearly from the policemen.
If it's true now that the police are the ones doing the firing, who are they shooting at?
You know, since the demonstration began, and since they decided to try to stop the demonstrations by shooting at people, the policemen now are in the streets, in the places where people live. So most of the time, they're not shooting clearly against the people, but sometimes they shoot against people in the houses or in the street. But it seems like most of the time they are shooting in the air just to terrorize people, even if they can shoot at people also and kill some people. But most of the time it seems that the aim is to terrorize people.
So as we were saying, today is election day in Burundi. President Pierre Nkurunziza is going ahead with the election. We hear the opposition is boycotting the elections.
Yes, the opposition is boycotting the elections because they say the context is not peaceful, that it's not a free election, it's not a fair election. There's insecurity, they cannot demonstrate, they cannot talk on media. There are no more free media in this country. So everything is under the control of the president's people. The opposition said there is no need to go in such kind of process. Why it's clear that this is not a democratic process?
If you talk to government people, they say they have other political parties that are taking part in the election.
Yes, there are wings of political parties in this process. There is a small wing of Reprona Party, there is a small wing of FNL Party that is taking part in this election. But those people are also assimilated to the ruling party. Nobody is considering them as opposition parties. They are financed by the ruling party. They are financed by the government so that they can give some credibility to the whole process. But no one takes them as serious people during this process here.
Innocent Muhozi is the general manager of the Band Independent Renaissance Radio and Television Network in Burundi. He was speaking with me from the capital, Bujumbura. An extra year of schooling has been shown to cut the risk of HIV infection by a third. The authors of a new study say education is cost-effective as HIV prevention alone, not counting all the other benefits. Viewer Steve Baragona has more.
Despite unprecedented global public health efforts, more than 2 million people are infected with HIV each year, notes Boston University health economist Jacob Bohr.
There's a real question about how to reduce that number and how to get to a place where the epidemic is really on the decline.
That question is especially pressing in Botswana, where nearly a quarter of the population is infected. Many experts believe more educated people are less likely to contract the virus, but it's been hard to prove. In 1996, Botswana made a change in its education system that offered a natural experiment. The government moved grade 10 back to junior secondary school, which previously had ended at grade 9. The researchers wanted to see what impact that extra year of schooling had years later when the students were adults.
The effects are large, and we were surprised by how large they were.
Writing in the journal The Lancet Global Health, the study found the risk of infection fell about 8 percentage points, from 25% to 17%. The effects were even larger for women, nearly 12 percentage points. And it was cost-effective, in roughly the same range as other proven prevention strategies.
I think that this study really provides evidence that we should consider formal schooling, particularly secondary schooling, as part of HIV prevention.
In an accompanying commentary, New York University health economist Karen Greppen said the study provides strong and compelling evidence that education can lower HIV risk. But she added there's more to gain.
The other reason to keep people in education is actually to educate them and provide them with better opportunities later in life as well.
It's not clear exactly how education lowers HIV risk. Better job prospects might be a factor, especially for women. Or the additional schooling may be improving cognitive skills that help people make better decisions. Bohr says upcoming research will address those questions. Steve Baragona, VOA News, Washington.
A local Ebola response coordinator in Sierra Leone says his region will from now on jail people who violate the country's emergency laws intended to prevent the spread of the disease. Raymond Kabia, District Ebola Response Center coordinator for Sierra Leone's Port Local District, says the chronic violators are those who continue to carry out secret burials, wash dead bodies, and hide sick people in their homes without notifying the authorities. He said their actions have hampered Sierra Leone's desire to be Ebola-free.
First of all, we are not reinventing the wheel. This is really derived from the bylaws, the nationwide chiefdom bylaws that were set up when Ebola came into Sierra Leone. What this simply means is that for the things that they've been doing, where they were just being fined 500,000 leones, which is what is on the bylaws, the bylaws says you get fined 500,000 leones or you go to jail. So basically what we've done this time around is to make sure that rather than fining these people the 500,000 leones, which they normally get their friends or relatives to pay, and then they continue doing the same thing, we say this time around we'll use the other option of sending these people to jail rather than asking them to pay the 500,000 leones.
Who are the chronic violators that you're talking about?
Yes, chronic violators are the ones that do these secret burials. That's one. These are the ones that continue to wash dead bodies. That's two. And these are the ones that continue to harbor, you know, people in their homes without notifying the authorities. You know, you have a stranger come to your house in a village. You're supposed to inform the headman of the village. It is left with the village headman or the chief of the town to say, well, look, we are pretty satisfied that this is a good stranger, and yes, they can stay. But you also have the responsibility now that if you take that stranger into your home and then that stranger gets sick and brings in Ebola into the house and then, of course, into the neighborhood, then you get to go to jail because, you know, you really took that risk. Right now, we have seen that this has been the major problem that we're getting. We had gone up to 31 days of zero cases. But somebody picked up their mother from another district, came all the way right through, took them to one of our chiefdoms, and that one single case has brought us over 120 infections. And we cannot afford to continue with this kind of problem. We want Ebola to be over with in our country and in our district.
These orders you're talking about to jail people, the government must be on board. Have they given you the permission?
Absolutely. Let me make this clear that, like I said earlier, we are not reinventing the wheel. This is all part of the national chiefdom bylaws. These are acceptable bylaws in every chiefdom of the country. This is how we got rid of Ebola in Kailan District, where it started, in Kenema District, where it came second, in Bo District, in Moyamba, in Pujao, and all the way up to the north, in Tonkolili, in Bombali, in Kwenadugu. Now, the problem is only with Port Loko District and Kambia District.
Raymond Kabia is District Ebola Response Center Coordinator for Sierra Leone's Port Loko District. You are speaking with me from Port Loko in northern Sierra Leone. Researchers in Kenya are reporting a major success in the large-scale trial of a new pneumonia vaccine. Leno Ruvaga has the story from VOA's East Africa Bureau in Nairobi.
The vaccine, known as PCV10, was given to 35,000 children in the town of Kilifi over a period of 7 years. 80% of these children showed stronger resistance to pneumonia once the vaccine was administered. Martin Ota, a research officer with the World Health Organization, was among those present when the results were unveiled at a meeting in Nairobi Wednesday. He says the vaccine should go into circulation immediately.
The results are a delight to see. They are having tremendous impact. And this impact is not only directly on the children who have received the vaccine. They are also protecting people, other children who did not receive the vaccine, as well as in adults. So in our opinion, I think this vaccine has had a tremendous impact and should be encouraged to be used.
Pneumonia is an acute respiratory infection that affects the lungs. According to the World Health Organization, it kills more than 930,000 children under the age of 5 each year. In Kenya, the illness killed more than 16,000 people as recently as 2000, although that number has declined somewhat. Tabitha Mwangi, a lecturer at Pwani University in Mombasa, nearly lost her son Matthew to pneumonia 7 years ago. She considers herself lucky that a local hospital was able to save him.
When we got in, immediately he got oxygen. Now you go to a lot of hospitals, there's no oxygen. You go to a lot of hospitals, they stock out of antibiotics. So we were lucky that we went to a hospital where there was oxygen and there was antibiotics, and he was immediately put in on treatment. I think things are getting better with the vaccine being available and all the children being vaccinated.
Kenya's Ministry of Health began the trial in 2011 with funding provided by Gavi, a Geneva-based group that works to increase access to new and underused vaccines. The trial results were studied by researchers at the Kenya Medical Research Institute. Professor Anthony Scott, a senior scientist at KEMRI, raved about the impact of the new vaccine.
We're seeing somewhere between a 95 and 100% reduction in the number of cases of invasive pneumococcal disease. That is either pneumonia or meningitis, where the bacteria spreads into the bloodstream, and that's a very dangerous form. So the vaccine has had a profound effect on the most severe type of pneumococcal disease, and it also is reducing the burden of pneumonia in hospitals.
Kenyan authorities now plan to give the vaccine to babies nationwide in three doses at 6, 10, and 14 weeks. Lenny Ruvaga for VOA News, Nairobi.
And for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Marco Woma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Monday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. Egyptian hosts Smouha edged Morocco's Maghreb Tetouan 3-2 in mini-league action in the Orange Africa Champions League in Alexandria on Sunday night. Sudan's El Merrek beat Algeria's Mouloudia El Oulma 2-0 in Omdurman. In an all-Algerian encounter, USM Algiers pipped defending champions and hosts Entente Setif 2-1 in Setif, as the Democratic Republic of Congo's TP Mazembe and Sudan's El Hilal drew 0-0 in Lubumbashi. Elsewhere, Egyptian defending champions El Ahli trounced Tunisia's Esperance 3-0 in mini-league action in the Orange Africa Confederations Cup in Suez on Sunday night. Egypt's Zamalek edged Tunisia's CS Sfaxien 1-0 in Cairo. Tunisia's Etoile du Sahel pipped Mali's Stade Malien 1-0 as South Africa's Orlando Pirates upset their hosts AC Leopards 1-0 in Dolisi. Turning to volleyball, African champions Kenya outplayed hosts Mexico 25-16, 20-25, 21-25, 25-17 and 15-9 to clinch a hard-fought victory at the Women's World Grand Prix in Mexico City on Saturday, while Cuba dismissed Algeria in straight sets of 25-19, 25-18 and 25-16. Earlier on Friday, Peru beat Kenya in straight sets, while Algeria suffered a similar fate against Kazakhstan. Finally, in rugby, Kenya overpowered their visitors Tunisia 46-15 in a Confederation of African Rugby Division 1A encounter in Nairobi on Sunday. Elsewhere, hosts Zambia beat Zimbabwe A side 19-12 in a Confederation of African Rugby Division 1C Africa Cup in Lusaka on Saturday. As a result, Zambia win the three-way contest with Nigeria second ahead of Zimbabwe A side. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. At least two people died in overnight violence in Burundi's capital, Bujumbura. Witnesses reported on Sunday as tensions rise in the lead-up to controversial elections. Burundi's opposition parties say they will not participate in national elections as protests against the president bid for a third term in office. And that is it for this Monday, June 29th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting this week with us. I am James Butte in Washington saying, have a lovely day.
Next on Let's Talk, join host Sunday Shamari and his guest discussing cars. Is it a status symbol? This lighthearted show covers topics of your interest with some hilarity. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.